House Finance come to order. It's 9:43 a.m. the 6th of April 2012. We have members present: Representative Jewell, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Guerra, Representative Fairclough, Stoltz, Co-Chair Thomas, Representative Dugan, Representative Edgman, Representative Costello, and Representative Newman. We have a quorum to do business. This morning's agenda, we have House Bill 276. We'll invite the sponsor up. It's our intent to have a presentation of the bill, and I want to make sure we take the public testimony right after that so folks don't have to wait around, and we'll go to our general discussion and probing questions. Welcome, Representative Thompson and Ms. Pearson.
Thank you.
You get the regulars discount here.
I'm Steve Thompson, representative from Fairbanks House District 10. And thank you, Mr. Chairman of the Committee. We're here to talk about House Bill 276, which is an act providing for a credit against the oil and gas production tax for costs incurred for conducting seismic exploration and drilling certain oil and natural gas exploration wells in certain basins, and providing a special tax rate for the new oil or gas production south of 68 degrees north latitude. I'd like to start by providing a little background for this CS, and then I'll have my staff.
Madam Vice Chair, I've missed a step here.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move before the committee the CS for House Bill 276, Finance 27-LS1193-G, dated 4-5-2012.
I'll object for this vivid description. Ms. Pearson will eventually provide. Please proceed, Representative Thompson.
Thank you. I'll give you a little background. This bill was originally conceived to provide a tax credit meaningful enough to attract exploration in the Nana Basin. Fairbanks is suffering from staggering energy costs. Our community spent over $660 million last year for space heating. Their average kilowatt-hour charge is over 23 cents. Average heating oil prices are now over $4 per gallon, and natural gas is over $23 per MCBF and only available to 1,100 customers due to shortages of supplies. Due to the high cost of energy, many people are burning wood and coal, and this is not helping the Fairbanks PM 2.5 EPA standards. Some residents have had to choose between paying for necessities or keeping warm, especially this winter with the extreme cold that we've had. The lack of adequate gas supplies has also created a stumbling block for economic development. Businesses are struggling and development has been totally curtailed. Yet just 50 miles north of Fairbanks lays the Nenana Basin, where there is an exciting potential for gas and possibly oil. This basin is situated adjacent to roads, adjacent to the railroad, and it is close to power transmission systems. After working with the House Resources Committee, Department of Natural Resources, Department of Revenue, and the Department of Law, and other communities interested in this concept, the bill was developed. The bill was expanded to include drilling in other unexplored, underexplored basins of the state, and expanded to additionally include seismic operations. Yet the original concept of the bill was preserved, which is to serve Alaskans, not only by providing incentives that would lead to commercialization of hydrocarbons for export, but also to promote expansion for oil and gas resources in other basins where there is a possibility for local regional use. Ever present in these discussions was how to balance the elements of the bill as a public policy. Number one, the state's priority to inspire exploration and development. Number two, the level of risk that is reasonable for the state to carry. Number three, the total financial contribution the state is willing to make. And number four, the potential for a return on the state's investment. I'll now have my staff, Jane Pearson, run through the specifics of the bill.
And primarily the changes in the new committee substitute being proposed. Ms. Pearson, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. The major changes from version E to version G, which you have before you, is a Section 2, we added a new section to the bill that provides for a 4% production tax for the first 7 years following the commencement of commercialization or production of taxes levied under AS 4355011E, for whichever is less, for production before 2022. Should there be a commercial find of oil or gas produced south of 68 degrees north latitude? When we drafted this section, I have a question for the committee. One of the things that happened was that we related it back to gas subject to J, which is Cook Inlet gas, or subject to K, which is Cook Inlet oil. What we did in drafting it this way was create a situation that production between new production in Cook Inlet between 2012 and before January 2020 could fall into the 4% tax rate. So if Kitchen Lights were to come on board in 2020, they would have 2 years under the current J tax rate, and then it would switch to the 4%. I talked to the drafters about this because it was not the original intent of the bill. The original intent of the bill was to ring fence out the North Slope and Cook Inlet and just offer this tax break to new production in Middle Earth. I talked to the drafter, and this is an easy fix and something for the committee might want to consider. So that was a change that we made, and that was one of the consequences that came out of it being drafted this way, to make the committee aware of that situation. Some of this switched around. We did add into the latest version federal onshore lands after discussions with Department of Revenue. They said the tax consequences were fairly equal to that on private land. Many of the basins that you have a diagram of in your package are federal, private, and state lands in them. So this would, if a fine were to happen in a basin that had all those types of lands, it would be covered. There are other minor changes. Because we added this new 4% tax, it originally started as a paragraph. Because these are oil and gas taxes in Alaska, it sort of spread out to other areas that needed conforming amendments. So that is what you see in Section 7 and Section 8 of this bill. Those are conforming amendments. It would make production tax subject to the same benefits and taxes as that would be available to other taxes under 011. And those are basically the changes that were made. And if I could, I just like to run you through some of the specifics.
And yeah, that was going to be my next request, that you go through the intent of the bill.
Section 6 of the bill.
I also like to note we're under the watchful eye of Senate Resources staff, so everybody be careful.
Actually, we've been saved by Senate Resources staff. I hate to tell you that. through the chair, this is Jan Pearson. Section 6 in the bill before you includes six geologic areas for exploration. There's a map in your package. All these areas were identified by DNR as having potential for discovery of hydrocarbons, and they all have proximity to existing communities with struggling energy costs. They're the Kotzebue and Sulawak basins, the Nenana and Yukon Flats, Emonic, Glen Allen, the Clapper River area, Ajijic, which is in the northern Alaska Peninsula, and Port Mueller in the southern Alaska Peninsula. And with these addition of these five other areas to the bill, the potential cost and risk to the state rose. To address this, HB 276 limits the number of exploration wells and seismic exploration available for credits and limits the credits. For an exploration well credit, is limited to a number of four wells in one of the areas identified on the map, with no more than two wells in any one area. The tax credit for drilling is for 80% of the total exploration expenditures for work performed, or $22.5 million, whichever is less. And sort of if you calculate it off the 65 5% that may be available, it's, you know, a bump over what is currently on the books. Seismic credits were created in this bill to attract new geophysical analysts. The seismic credits are for four total projects, only one per area identified on the map. The credit amount is 75% of the total exploration expenditures, or $7.5 million, whichever is less. DNR had given us a figure of approximately $10 million for these drillings, so that's how we got to that number. And this would be 10% more, really, than what is available under the 0.025 and 0.023 credits, which would be available to an explorer. These credits apply to work performed after June 1, 2012, and like other protection tax credits in AS4355025, they expire in 2016. The tax credit is also not stackable with other credits provided under 0.025 or 0.023. It is the intent of this bill that the quick window for these credits creates some sort of stampede to create exploration in these areas. Section 6 was created to ensure the state's investment is warranted, the exploration projects are sound, and with DNR's input, pre-qualification criteria were created that must be satisfied before any project commences under these credits. DNR has broad discretion to weigh these factors within 60 days or as soon as practicable before approving or denying an exploration well or seismic exploration credit under this bill. These pre-qualification criteria can be for drilling can be found on page 7, line 21, through page 8, line 2, and for seismic on page 8, lines 24, through page 9, line 2. Also key in our discussions was how the state gets a return on the investment. More geological data for state use and public release helps to expand the state's knowledge of the potential resources in these remote areas. It assists present and future explorers and seismic data that could very well attract new investment and development in the state, bringing the potential to increase production, tax revenues, and royalties. Added as qualifications for credits under this bill is a requirement that all exploration, drilling, and seismic data collected must be turned over to the state and be available to be made public within 2 years of receiving the credit. Section 2 of the bill. The final consideration that arose was what if an explorer in one of these basins is successful? These are remote frontier areas. They're difficult to reach. They face logistical obstacles and challenges getting hydrocarbons to markets. Yet producers in these areas would pay the same production tax as compares to North Slope, which already has infrastructure and access to markets. Therefore, we added another component. For those explorers who reach commercial production in one of these frontier basins, we gave them a break on their production tax rate of 4% or taxes under 0.011E, whichever is less, for 7 years following commencement of commercial production in areas that did not have oil or gas production prior to January 1, 2013. And after the 7 years, the tax rate reverts back to what is an existing statute. It's crafted so it applies to new production south of 68 degrees latitude for oil and gas that is not subject to J or K of this section, which would be the Cook Inlet, which is the first issue I brought up in Section 2 of the bill. This bill gives no breaks on royalties, corporate income tax, or property taxes. What it does is give explorers willing to take the risk to explore in these remote areas some predictability for the first 7 years of hydrocarbon commercialization. This will assist these companies in obtaining financing for infrastructure and other costs associated with these remote areas, and that's been a problem for when we talked to Doyle on one of their problems is getting financing because it's very hard for investors to look at how the taxes would work for them. So that completes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I would just remind all staff, and we've had, I guess I
need to keep repeating it, no texting in office, especially people who work for sponsors of anti-texting legislation. They've been the worst offenders all year long, and I'm just tired of doing the warnings. And I've held my tongue on this one, but I appreciate a little better compliance. There's a room over there where you can text. And with that, Representative Thomas.
Thank you. I have a couple. I understand you still got to build a bridge to get to the Nanana Basin. Is that somewhere in a plan out there in the big blue sky somewhere before? Or is that in your capital budget? Or
They did build a exploration on the southern end of the Nanana Basin 2 years ago. They did a winter ice road or ice bridge and managed to get it done, and they do have a partial road built out through that area. As far as the bridge itself, it would be very nice, but I don't know if that's going to be funded or not.
Oh, okay. I just serve in the Nanana area. The other question I have, Representative Thompson, is that what happens if the drilling company goes out, does a seismic research, and then they go drill a dry hole? I think they drilled and found no gas before, right? So what if they do that again, using their seismic research, come back, and do they get a tax credit for dry holes?
Through the chair, to the co-chair. The way it's set up, it is to take away some of that risk that they have. So if they do have a dry hole, yes, they would be eligible for the credit. State has a chance to look at their seismic work and has to pre-approve that it does look like a very, very strong potential. If the seismic work doesn't look like it's got the strong potential, the state could say, no, we don't want to, we don't think this is a viable thing to spend our money on. And to back up a little bit on the bridge, we have Jim Murray from Doyon who is looking to try to get some investors to drill out there, and he might give you some insight on the bridge project.
But I'd like you answered before, because that was leading up to my next question. If they didn't find gas and the state researches it, so if you look at it first, then we're at risk. And also, I guess you'd say to allow you to go drill and you find a dry hole, then you get the tax credit. So I'm happy.
And I want to, as you're done with your initial presentation, I wanted to go to the public testimony and we'll come right back to question. And I also wanted Representative Jewell to reference your proposed amendment so we can get comments from folks and try to create some efficiencies here. Just reference what you would hope for.
Yes, there's an amendment before you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. That would raise the exploration cap from $22,500,000 to $25 million. And the reason that number was landed on is the allowable tax or exploration credits that are allowed in Cook Inlet. So just bringing it up to that place. Thank you.
That amendment hasn't been offered yet, but I just wanted folks to be able to comment on that, because that is the only amendment I've really seen. I'll remove my objection from the committee substitute being adopted as our working document. Are there any other objections? Hearing none is before us. We're going to go to the testimony and then come right back to you, Representative Newman. You can stay in place. I think everybody's remote, Representative Thompson. Unless you need to leave, I certainly understand that. We'll first go to Elizabeth Hensley in Anchorage.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on this bill. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Sagalick Hensley. I'm with Nana Regional Corporation, and I would like to get Nana's support for this bill on the record. We really thank Representative Thompson for introducing this bill, and thanks to Representative Jewell for introducing the bill that he originally did, which has been kind of folded into this bill. It's a great bill in our view. I would just like to quickly draw your attention to the cost of energy in our region, which is one of the main reasons we support this bill. The average cost of 1 gallon of gas in the Nana region is $7.92. Kobuk pays the highest rate at $10.46 per gallon, and Buckland pays the lowest at $6.25 per gallon. With those costs for 1 gallon of gas, this bill could substantially help to get people to come up and explore the Coxview Basin and see what we've got there. And if it's a successful find, then we would be very happy to try to reduce the cost of energy within the region and potentially export. I've also got Lance Miller, our Vice President of Resources here, who, if you don't mind, would like to get on the record as well.
Very briefly, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, thank you, and I will try to be brief. Again, my name is Lance Miller, Vice President of Resources for NRC. Again, supporting the bill and just a little bit of history. Of course, there was two stratigraphic wells drilled in the Coxview Basin, in 1974. Since then, there's been no activity, but NANA, for the last 15-plus years, has taken that data, compiled over 1,500 miles of 2D seismic work, and working with a California Independent, come up with some significant targets for oil and gas. And again, as I think you've heard before, the challenge has been attracting risk capital. So we're really encouraged about this because this will help sort of simplify when we're out there shopping the incentives on the front end and the tax structure on the back end to try to get some folks to invest in these frontier basins. So again, I think the Coxview Basin in particular is one of those untested and untapped resources for potential hydrocarbons, and we hope this will be one more tool to help bring some dollars so we can drill for hydrocarbons for Alaska as well as the region. Thank you very much.
How much is the state currently collecting in protection taxes from the Nanana Basin and the Coxview Basin?
In taxes? There. You mean from the...
You don't answer that. That's rhetorical.
Yeah. Okay. Right. But if you want to know how much the state is getting from the region, of course, we can talk about Red Dog. So
yeah.
We just hope to add to this with hydrocarbons.
We can talk about Red Dog now and just not worry about Senate Bill 66 later. However, we want to use our time.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Next, we have... James Mary in Fairbanks.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Mary, please.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is James Mary. I'm the Senior Vice President for Lands and Natural Resources at Doyon Limited at our home office in Fairbanks. Most of you all know who Doyon is. We are the one of the regional corporations formed under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. We have over 18,000 shareholders. We are the largest private landowner in the state of Alaska, with holdings over 12.5 million acres spread throughout interior Alaska. We are in many, many businesses. Primarily, our operating businesses are oil field support, utilities, and tourism here in the state. And we have over 1,500 employees resident here in Alaska. What I want to talk about, though, is the natural resources segment of the company, focusing on the oil and gas exploration that we've undertaken, that we're involved in, both on Doyon lands and on nearby state lands. And really, these are the focus of HB 276. Two basins in particular where we are working, the Nanana Basin, which is primarily state lands and also in parts of the Yukon Flats, which is north of Fairbanks by a bit over 100 miles, and where we have Doyon lands, Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act lands. Size-wise, the Nanana Basin is about 500,000 acres that we're looking at, and there really are three Nanana Basin-sized sub-basins in the Yukon Flats, so it's quite a bit bigger, actually, than the Nanana Basin. What I wanted to talk about is our business model for a second. We are not a production company. We are an exploration company. At least we take that approach. We're a little bit different, I think, from the NANA folks, and that we've been much more aggressive. both on our own lands and state lands as far as spending money in recent years, primarily precipitated, frankly, by the credits that have been offered in the past to move some of these projects along. We operate kind of like a junior mining company in the sense that we do a fair amount of basic exploration, try to take it to a point, and then try to get new investors to take it to kind of other heights, if you will. But we're very different from a lot of companies that do these things. So we're truly local. We have shareholder communities near these areas that need jobs and other opportunities. Clearly, there are energy issues. So I certainly want to echo the things that Ms. Hensley was saying about rural energy problems. But in any event, we are local, about as local as you can get, I guess. And I did mention the fact that we have several oil field support service businesses, but primarily we do a lot of drilling on the North Slope, remote camp services, security, pipeline construction, and engineering. And so I guess there's a multiplier effect if we have success. And so those are all of the things that really kind of keep us interested in trying to move these things along. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the money does stay here. But we do need help. We can't do these things on our own. We are working in two basins, like I said, in the Nanana Basin. Let me focus on that, really. Mostly state lands. And we do have some partners, Rampart Energy from Denver, ASRC, Usavelli, Coal Mining Company, and a smaller company from the Midwest called Cedar Creek. But Doyen is the majority owner of this project since 2010, and we're the operator today. We are actually conducting seismic right now in the Nanana Basin, a 100-mile program, which is supported and funded solely by Doyen and obviously with some state help as well. But basically, you know, the risks in these basins, I think, as Jane Pearson pointed out, is that while there have been some prior efforts by industry, large industries not interested in these areas, there are no discoveries, there's little or no infrastructure, they're certainly unexplored to underexplored, there's no template for development, so the geologic and project risks are considered much higher than in other parts of the state. Yet the credits that are available to us and the oil taxes in particular really are no different from what goes on the North Slope. And so there really is a need, we believe, to have a different regime for these areas that will hopefully spark some new interest. And so and the geology, the things that we've done in prior years in the Nanana Basin, we've done earlier seismic, we've drilled a well. The well, although it wasn't commercial, it was incredibly informative to us. And what we see in the Nanana Basin is because clearly there is an active petroleum system. There's gas being generated in the Nanana Basin. There are excellent oil source rocks, frankly, although immature in the place where we drilled. But this is really not enough to basically attract new people into these areas. Even though we have deep basins, we've got oil source rocks, we've got widespread, actually, surface expression of microseeps of oil on the surface in both these basins. And actually, they're not that remote for Alaska when you kind of step back from it. But it's not enough to attract new investment. And there are two essential components to 276, and we think both are needed to attract new capital. There's this limited additional help, the credits on early exploration. It really, over the current credit program that's in place, the total amount of exposure to the state, excluding administration by DNR, is a little over $20 million. And then the other piece, which is we think is also essential, is it provides assurance for a limited tax exposure during the initial critical and risky phase of capital recovery. And so, you know, to be able to attract that new capital, both pieces we think are needed, and HB 276 goes a really a long way to do that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Marion. I'm glad to have two representatives of the business arms of the Yanks, the corporations, because they are major employers in my district, whether it's ASRC, NANA, through their numerous subsidiaries, both oil and service, and Siri, I don't like to miss a chance to let how much these companies are an important part of our local economies. If other districts are anything like mine, There are far more people working for these than for the major producers than these companies. So appreciate they're at the table at this. Is there any other public testimony? We do have Mr. Decker from Division of Oil and Gas, Mr. Fonder from Department of Revenue, Mr. Dees, the auditor from Department of Revenue, Bob Swenson from DNR, our state geologist who's taken a lead on these issues, and Mr. Smith from Division of Oil and Gas. So all those folks are online. But that, if there are any questions for any of these people, we're going to ahead and go ahead and close public testimony if there's no objection. And we'll go to Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I
think this felt like a question.
We're looking at page 2, in section 2, amended a new subsection to read. You mentioned, I'm on 5, and this would add new section P to 011, which is the oil and gas production tax section. You mentioned 7 years immediately following commencement. Why? I looked at your dates here for production that began after December 31st, 2012, and before 2022. How did we come up with 7 years there and between these two dates?
Representative Newman, through the chair. The 7 years we came up with working with Doyon and what they thought would be necessary. The dates, January 1, 2022 is a pretty accepted date in the statute for when things expire. So we took it as commercial production beginning before that date. And December 31st, 2012, I believe, was a date that we worked with in statute. It's been a while, so I'm not exactly sure why the December 31st, 2012.
Mr. Chair, the reason I asked the question is, and why the dates there is, if you to drill and develop, where, you know, they've got a lot of the drilling done, but the development part on that, you're probably looking at about 5 years before you come into production on something like that. So even though they start there, that puts it out to 2017, that gives them 4 years probably to allow, but you talk about, you know, trying to get 7 years of immediately, so that the numbers don't add up there for trying to get the maximum amount.
Representative Newman, through the chair. The way this reads is it would be 7 years after commercial production begins, and commercial production could begin January 1st, 2022 and extend for 7 years because it is when the commercial production begins. It's not ring-faced as to, or it's not a date certain as to this has the, it has to be taken in between there.
Sure. Jane or Representative, do you know what the composition of the oil is? There any, do we know what the composition of the, talks about the hydrocarbons being produced, the differences between oil or the gas, or is it all oil, is it all gas? Do we know the composition?
Representative Newhorn, through the chair, I know when talking with Doyon, they are looking at both oil and gas. I know they started out exploring for gas and have had very positive indications there may be oil in that field. So.
Mr. Chair, I just kind of bring that up now with discussions, too, that may or may not happen on some decoupling on oil and gas and how it could affect this with the 4%. That looks at, kind of copies off some of the cookie unit work for oil and gas, but they generally extend longer than the time differentials in there. The reason I ask that, trying to maximize the value of this bill, you know, to try and make sure we get some of that happening, but thank you, Mr. Chair, for now.
Representative Costello, we're going to go to the amendment, because we're going to come back this afternoon on this one.
Thank you, through the chair. I have two questions. One is, what happens to the seismic information that is collected if the, you know, development doesn't end up producing? Is that information that will be retained and owned by the state, or does that stay with the person who's receiving the credit.
Yeah, Bob Swenson on the line. Do you want to defer that to him, or do you want to answer that?
Representative Costello, I believe I can answer that one. It actually does go to the state. If they get the credit, it goes to the state, and it is available to the public. And the hope is that the next person comes along, has more information, and it will help them commercialize one of these bases.
And, Mr. Swenson, while you're online with the minimal amount of syllables, can you confirm that?
Through the chair, this is Bob Swenson, state geologist with DNR. Yes, that is correct. After 2 years, the data that is collected in any of these programs would be made public, and the data would then be owned by the state.
Thank you, Mr. Swenson. That's very appreciated.
And then through the chair, my final question is, it's my understanding in our state statutes that we really separate exploration activity and credits and production credits, and we have a lot of discussions in the building about how we've done a really great job of incentivizing exploration. On the last line of the bill, it says that in the subsection, producer includes explorer. And can you explain if there's any impact on that, that we may not be anticipating, and why did we choose to handle it that way rather than just say producer or explorer throughout the subsection?
Representative Costello, through the chair, if I could call a lifeline on that one. Susan Pollard is in the room, and she is with Department of Law and does a lot of the drafting here. Maybe she can help us with that.
With her little binder.
Welcome, Ms. Pollard.
Thank you. My name is Susan Pollard. I'm with the Department of Law, Oil, Gas, and Mining Section, Juneau. Representative Costello, through the chair, your question is related to about producer and explorer is not a change from current law. I want to make sure that that's clear. But you're going to have an inst and the provision that you're pointing to relates to the determination of production tax values. There are certain subsets of production where a part of positive production tax viability is perhaps shielded by a ceiling. The Department of Revenue makes adjustments based on the lease expenditures and allocates part of them to the revenue that's under the tax ceiling. And if you want further explanation of that, Mr. Chair Stoltz, I thought you said that Lenny Dees was on. He could address that. So the reason for this very final language and producer includes explorer is you're going to have instances where you've got a producer that's doing some exploration, and while the tax is written so that a producer is subject to the production tax, there are also instances where you're in an exploration mode. And you'd still be allowed to get the credits. So, and Chair Stoltz, Representative, so I think the main point here is that that's consistent with current law, and that doesn't make a change in the current statute.
One final question through the chair. Do we define producer and explorer in our statute?
I can. Do you want to give me a minute just to go directly to the statute?
Mr. Chair, is that okay?
why don't we come back okay. In the afternoon on this, and then we can have Mr. Dees jump in on it, too. I don't want to short shrift your line of question. We'll come back here. I want to represent Jewell has the amendment. We'll take up the one amendment we have. There may be others.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move amendment one.
I'll object, just so we have some discussion on the record. As it is a
session. As previously mentioned, Mr. Chairman, this would raise the exploration cap from what is currently in the bill at $22,500,000 to $25 million, and this would match what is currently being allowed in the Cook Inlet of Alaska. And while it was tempting to try and reach for a higher number simply because the cost of trying to get to the other parts of the state would be higher. This is, I thought, would be reasonable since right now there isn't anything out there that encourages exploration, and these are potential new fields to come online. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This is PCE, production cost equity.
Is there any objection to this, Representative Newman?
Representative Jewell, where is that located in statute?
Page 5.
I mean, what statute does the $25 million referenced in Coquitlam, do you know where that's at in statute? Or maybe one of the oil and gas guys could.
4355
025. 025. A. I was just asking what that
was at. Oh, excuse me. Actually, it's under B, I think. I'll follow it A. Well, I just want to make sure Representative Newman has his curiosity satisfied. What I do.
Mr. Chair, I just was questioning it because it, in another statute that talks about Cook Inlet gas, it's $12 million for calendar year under 024.
Is there any comment from the Department of Revenue and Natural Resources? Why don't we just come back to it? But we've got it on there. I'll maintain my objection, and we will adjourn until 1:30, and then we'll commence discussion on this bill. Any other? Okay. What team?